This is February 23rd in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Coach Brad Bradshaw at the Chapel Hill Library.
Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Bob.
Appreciate you coming here and talking with me this morning. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
I'll begin with a broad question and with two parts. Where did you grow up, and what was it like growing up?
I'm a native of Durham, North Carolina, and I grew up, and I don't know whether you know where it is or not, but if you know where Northgate Mall is, I was born and raised in that particular vicinity. I was born in a neighborhood that was very caring. I happened to be the only child from a single parent family being raised by my mother. And all of us in the neighborhood were basically the same. All of us were, and we didn't know that we were basically the same. And when I said basically the same, all of us were poor because none of us had anything at all. And it so happened that being raised up by a single parent family, that she was insisted that one of the things that I tried to do would be to finish high school because no one in my family had ever finished high school. And believe it or not, Bob, I have been basically surrounded by women most of my life. And just to get away from a little bit and come back to it, I'm surrounded by women now. There's my mother. I have two daughters, my wife. I have a granddaughter, and I have an aunt who has two daughters. And when Brad passes off, there won't be any more Bradshaws because I have no brothers and sisters, and there are no other men in my family. But going further, I went to an elementary school, which was a good school, and the only persons there were ladies. Ladies taught us at Walltown Elementary School. It's at the corner of Club Boulevard in what is now known as, I call it Third Street, still they've renamed a street, but it's still Third Street to me. And it was strictly segregated. However, we got a basic good education. Been in a community that was away from a lot of other people, not too close to a whole lot of people, and then close enough. And believe it or not, being segregated, we accepted the fact that no buses ran for us to go to high school when we did go, and what we had to do was walk. We walked by many white schools to go to high school. And the only school, black high school in town at that particular time was Hillside High School. So I'm a product of Hillside also. Not the first Hillside, but the second Hillside. There's been three Hillsides, and the newest one is the fourth Hillside. So I'm a product of the old Hillside High School, which went from grade 7 through 12. I was fortunate enough as a kid to be around in a community and people who really cared for the kids in that particular community, because they were the ones who helped direct you to be good, do the best that you could while you were young. In other words, if I did something wrong, not only could people in the neighborhood do things to me, but also they could tell my mother, and my mother would do things to me. I consider myself as being a pretty good elementary school student, because during that particular time, we had to rent books when we went to school, and moving from the sixth grade to the seventh grade, I think I had the second highest average it was, so therefore I got my book rental fee paid for a half a year when I went to high school. Upon entering high school in the seventh grade, we ran into all of the kids from across the whole spectrum of Durham, and most of us had to go travel the same way. We walked to school, walk from school, and it was a pretty good distance. One thing that we had in our favor as far as coming from the Walltown community was that there was a Liggett and Miles tobacco factory then was in full force. A lot of our parents, a lot of our friends, and a lot of people in the neighborhood worked at this place. So whenever we'd get at a certain point, we always tried to thumb our way from that particular point to school. Sometimes we were successful and sometimes we weren't successful. We knew what time we had to be to school, so we didn't have a ride. We'll see by 7:45, we had to foot it then so that we could get to school at least by 8:15. In high school, I went from the 7th grade to the 9th grade because they added the 12th grade. And I've never been in the 8th grade, so I went from 7th grade to 9th grade. And being in the 9th grade, being in that particular school was quite an experience. Because as I moved through school, then I learned the value of some of the things that we had done in the community. And that was I became an athlete. And becoming an athlete, it was one of those things that was real good for the whole city of Durham. I played on a football team in high school that was undefeated, untied, and unscored on. A lot of people don't know that either, Bob, but that was true. And the next year, that was my junior year, my senior year, I played on a football team that didn't lose a game. So the two main years that I played football in high school, we were undefeated and untied. We did not lose a game. But the team of 1943, many of us are still together. I think there are still about 6 or 7 of us. We meet once a month to keep that particular fire going. Integration, well, I hadn't even thought about it. We accepted the fact that we were segregated. So we dealt with it in the ways that we could really and truthfully deal with it. No one thought about it in any form or fashion or what have you. We just accepted it and went on and did our thing. We played at the same park that the Durham High School played, which was the Durham Athletic Park, which is known as the DAP. We played, if we had home games that were conflicting, we played the night after Durham High School played. So therefore, we were able to play some Saturday night games, and also we played some Thanksgiving Day games and games like that. Very successful. We had a good following because of Hillside High School. After finishing high school, and I kind of backed my mom in a corner, she wanted me to really finish high school, and she didn't want me to participate in athletics my senior year. And I said, well, if I can't participate in athletics, I won't go to school, which meant then that was throwing a roadblock in what she had planned for me. I was fortunate enough that the coach of the high school was going back to his alma mater, which was North Carolina College for Negroes at that particular time, to become head coach and rekindle the football program, because they cut the football program out in about 1941, and they decided they would rekindle it again in 1945. So therefore, he was enticed to come to the college level to be the head coach. And I guess there were about 25 or 30 of us who went from Hillside High School with Coach Herman Riddick to North Carolina Central University. I had no idea that I would ever get the opportunity to go to college because of economic status as far as my family was concerned. But I was fortunate enough to go because of that particular person. After graduating from Central, and I'll have to put a little wrinkle in there, it took me 5 years to get out of school to graduate from North Carolina Central. Reason being that the first year that I went to college, I had never had that much free time on my hand in my life, because my life had been dictated to go to class and do this and do that and do the other. When I got to college, I got an opportunity to do the things that I wanted, and I misused it and abused it. So therefore, I was put on probation for 1 quarter, which was about over the summer, plus 3 months into the next school year, and then I was admitted back to school. So therefore, I graduated from participating in football, played baseball, tried out for the basketball team, tried out for the track team, and it was a good experience in North Carolina Central. So it took me actually 5 years to graduate from North Carolina Central. Bob, my mother only had a 6th grade education. So therefore, she was a domestic. She worked most of her life as a domestic. And she did do some work in and out of the tobacco factories. And I wish many times that had been her only job, because it was a little more lucrative and everything else. A lot of kids had that particular part. I did have my father's sister and her family lived about a half a block away from me. So I did have the resources where she was a very caring lady also, aunt, and her husband, who was my uncle, was, I consider, as being the best man that I could know of. He didn't know anything but go to work, support his family, come home, eat his dinner, smoke his pipe on the porch, and go to bed. So he was a very caring person, too. In fact, I do think that I did have some relatives over here in Orange County and in Chapel Hill, too. There were some Bradshaws, and they did not spell their name the same way that I spell mine. They were spelled their name B-R-A-D-S-H-E-R. My dad changed the name when he came to Durham and spelled it B-R-A-D-S-H-A-W. Reasons being, I'm not sure, but that was it. My mother was she basically controlled my particular activities while I was going to school. And she's 94 years old and still living at the present time. And she still lives in the same house that I spent a lot of years in. Plus, on top of that, she still tries to maintain and live by herself. I left when I coming to see you this morning. That's where I was coming from.
I thought you were going to say she's still trying to control your life.
Well, she does. She'll try in a few minutes now if I let her. So that's the way that go.
What kind of a house was it that you grew up in? Frame house, one story, heating, things like that.
Bob, I can tell you don't know much about the South then, really, especially when it comes to the Afro-American. At first, we lived in a house that was only basically three rooms. Three rooms, there was a front room, a middle room, which was a bedroom, and then the kitchen with the toilet facilities and those things being on the back. And it was a frame house. And believe it or not, my mother became so attached to it and wanted to stay there until I think maybe 20 years ago. I bought the house after some improvements on it and gave it to her for a birthday present. So she's still living in the same house, but it's much better now than it was when I was a kid coming up.
So it was a rental house, I assume?
It was a rental house.
And you had a wood-burning stove in there?
A wood-burning stove, and I said, Bob, that one day I was going to live in a house to the point to where I could walk around with no shoes on, no clothes on, and be warm. Because getting up in the morning, making fires, and having to bring coal and kindling and those things, it was a little bit rough. And it was the same way in the whole neighborhood, because in the morning, when you go outside, smoke would be coming from everybody's chimney, so it was basically the same. It's a different community now because of the changeovers and those particular things. There were some houses that were built across the street from where my mom lived that I know were at least 40 or 50 years old. And it so happened in the last 2 years they converted them and took the point to where it had one family home. And it looked very, very good now. So they added something to where she lives and to the Walltown community.
When you were growing up and your mom is working, who's looking after you during the day?
I hear a lot of talk about latchkey kids and those things, about what people are going to do. There were such things then as mailbox key kids. That's where the key was put in the mailbox. You knew that's where it was. So, and believe it or not, I know people were going in people's houses and stealing from them and those things. I think we basically raised ourselves because most of us like to play ball. We like to play football, and we try to play basketball, and we played softball. So we basically took care of ourselves. And there was always maybe someone around who was an adult who worked basically being responsible for us. But if they knew if anything was wrong, that they could tell us to the point. We basically had no one to do that. I mean, when I first came in to organize sports, though, there was a man that lived in our neighborhood who had played some baseball in one of the baseball teams. He had a pretty big backyard. So a lot of us went to his house and tried to play on it and play it through those types of things, too. No one basically was overseeing us at all.
When you were growing up, did you have a dictionary or an encyclopedia at home?
Those particular things that my mom and my aunt and my uncle working at Duke University, sometimes we were exposed to those things, to where we had those. But most of the time, when it came to encyclopedias, dictionaries, and those things, we had to use the ones that were at school. And believe it or not, a lot of those books were hand-me-downs. When I say hand-me-downs, they came from the white schools down to the black schools, and we had to rent them and what have you. But occasionally we would get some of the little books and things that would come from the university. Body of Five, my mama, my aunt, my uncle working at those different places. Sometimes they'd run across those things.
I'm interested in the chronology of what happened during your early years. You went to North Carolina Central. Graduated, not in 4 years, but in 5 years, but you graduated. And then what did you do after that?
Well, that particular year that I graduated, I knew that they had tried to draft me in the army before then, but it so happened that I got a deferment because it was in school. So the year that I graduated, I knew basically what was going to happen, that I basically was going into the service. So that particular summer, I did receive my notice that I would have to go into the service. And I went in the Army in October 1945, went in the service. And I was drafted basically for 20 months. Once I got in the service, they told me I had to do 4 years. I was often told that I could go to officers' candidate school if I wanted to go because of the education, because of some of the test scores that I made in the service. But I turned this down was because I wanted to work for a school and I really and truthfully wanted to go to work and make some money. My community was one of five on working and doing those things and try to better yourself and maybe help some other people that comes along when it comes to those particular things. So I went into the service. I spent 2 years in the service, and I spent 20 months of those particular 2 years in the United States Army paratrooper. I was a paratrooper. I was in the 188th Airborne Infantry Regiment at the station at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I was trained by a cadre that came from here to second out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And believe it or not, a lot of these particular persons challenged me to the point by saying that I could not make it because I was afraid to do those things. But I don't think that was the case. And so I really joined on a dare. And I spent 2 years in the paratroopers and doing those things. And I guess another reason, too, that I went to the paratroopers because the ones who did not join the paratroopers went to Korea, and I wasn't going to Korea, not at that particular time. I really, truthfully, I possibly could have gone off to candidate school, might would have made a career out of it, but my thing was I wanted to come home and I wanted to go to work. So that was a particular part about it. But it was a good experience. Got a lot of discipline, met a lot of people, did a lot of things, and basically on it there.
When you finished your service and the paratroopers, what did you do after that?
I came home and I decided that I had been preached to and talked to all through college, and if I haven't good instructors, that at that particular time, being an Afro-American, but an Afro-American needed not only would be a B.S. degree, basically needed a master's degree to better accept it was work is concerned. And then my particular thing was in the start of high school. school is I wanted to be a coach. So I went back to school and started to work on the master's degree. And that particular, I started back to school like December and went to work on the playground in my neighborhood and working on the playground. And so it happened that Coach Riddick came by one day and asked me that I want a job. And I said, well, I don't know, I'm in a master's program, maybe I need to go on. He said, well, I told the man I might have someone to take the job. So I agreed to go for an interview. When I went for an interview, I ended up taking a job which was down in Scotland County, North Carolina. Scotland County, Longbury, North Carolina, being the county seat, and this is where I went to work. I went to work at a school in Scotland County. It was the first black public high school in the county. Most of the kids in the particular county had paid to go to Lineberg Institute, meaning went to Lineberg Institute, but did not pay, but the state paid Lineberg Institute to educate those particular kids. So I went to work at this particular public high school in Lineberg, union school, basically 1 through 12, and I went to work there. I was the first athletic coach, first physical education teacher, and whatever else it needed to be done at that particular school. But it was so far from home, and being that I was a Durham boy, not too far, I wasn't but only 510 miles, that's a long way then. It was one of those things by my being a Durham boy, not exposed to the culture that was in that particular place. So I prayed every day for 3 years that the good Lord delivered me from down there. And if he delivered me from down there, I wouldn't even go back for a visit. And I think that I haven't been back no more than about 5 or 6 times in all of those particular years.
So you stayed there for 3 years?
Right.
So
stayed there for 3 years, and then I decided that I would start either looking to move or going back to school. And it so happened I came home one Saturday, and I heard that Coach Pillman, William Pillman, was going to leave for Lincoln High School here in Chapel Hill and go to the college ranks. So I came over on a Saturday, and we talked about it. He introduced me to the principal, Mr. McDougal. Mr. McDougal and I sat and talked about it, and then I went from there to see the superintendent, who was Dr. Joseph Ben Johnson. And so after that, he offered me the job. And Pillman and I had been in college together. We had played baseball together, and I knew him from way back because of his being an athlete at North Carolina Central before I went there. And he being a special person, and we hadn't played baseball together. So the way I was the one who succeeded Pillman.
What year was that?
That year was 1956.
So you were the coach at Lincoln from 1956?
From 1956 to 1961.
Mm-hmm. What are your remembrances of, let's just start with the school in general.
Well, the school in general, Pillman and Ed, excellent athletic teams being there. And when I was in high school, we had played against the old Black Chapel Hill High School then. They called it Orange County Training School then. We had played against them when I was in high school. And we had our little fun and little jokes about Chapel Hill. Not ever thinking that I would come here in Chapel Hill. He had excellent teams there, and I walked into a situation to where there were some excellent football players that were left around, good crop of football players. And my thing was worrying about how can I pull these particular kids together to the point that we can continue this particular tradition of Mr. Pillman. And that Huckin' Head, and I'll call him Huckin' Head, at Lincoln, and we talked about this and the kids and I. During that particular summer before I came to work at Lincoln, and so happened that I had some kids in Durham and there were some kids over here, and we played baseball that summer against each other. And I got to know some of them that particular way, and some of them got to know me. And when we had our first meeting, we talked about some things, and I let them express their opinions about certain things, and I expressed mine to the point where we came to a meeting of the mind. Chapel Hill is a special place to me because of the success that I had. I had great success at Chapel Hill. First year out of the Chapel Hill, retired for the state championship. The second year out of the Chapel Hill, we played the same team and we won the state championship. The third year I was here at Lincoln and Chapel Hill, we lost the state championship game. The fourth year that I was in Chapel Hill, we lost in the Eastern Final. Didn't get to the state to the final game. And my last year that I was here, we won the state championship. Along with that, being that we were only playing two sports, that we go up to the first year that I was here, and we made it to the semifinals, the basketball state championship. And the second year that I was here at Lincoln, we played for the state championship, played the state final. And then after that, we had some good teams, but we never could get out of the districts to play in the state final.
So you coach football and basketball?
Football, basketball, and anything else that they had. Athletic direct, talk classes, all the rest of those things. I was taught physical education and history.
What credo did you have? What did you have? I mean, look at the record that you have is astounding. You went to the state championship 4 out of 5 years.
Yeah.
And you either tied or won 3 of those right. 5 years. Okay. I mean, that's an incredible record. What did you do? What was the formula that you used for such success?
The formula that I used basically was the point when it came to discipline and hard work. We had to work real hard at the things that we were doing. And believe it or not, Bob, during that particular time, there was no other paid assistant on the faculty.
You did it
no
all
other paid, No other paid assistant on the faculty. I did have a couple of volunteers, and they would do things that I would ask them to do, or we'd discuss it, and they would do things that particular way. But when it comes to being paid, I was the one. And I think this was good for me because it gave me the opportunity to coach both sides of the ball. And when I said it, it gave me an opportunity to coach the line, to cook the end, and anything else that you were going to do. So it really prepared me for later when I moved to other jobs to be able to do other things when it comes to coaching. And there were a lot of people during that particular time that were real good to us when it comes to that particular part. And one the people that were good to us, the coaching staff down at the University of North Carolina was good to us because of things that we really needed that we didn't have and they knew we needed them, we could get there. Sometimes on loan or sometimes on gifts and sometimes on others. We had a lawyer following them, of blacks and whites in the particular community when we were doing real good. In fact, the superintendent told me once, said, well, see, you know, more people in North Carolina know you than know me. And I said, why you say that, Dr. Johnson? He said, well, I went to a meeting and I got ready to speak and someone said, oh, you the superintendent over in the town where they got that good black football team. So he said, they know you, you know, more so than they know me. But it was one of those things that took hard work. It took the administration was behind me. The whole town was behind me. All of the teachers were behind me. Parents got behind me. And it was one of those things to the point to where we just had certain rules and regulations. It wasn't going to be in that particular way. I know one year we put off the year before that, and these were seniors who put the starting quarterback off the team and two starting halfbacks. Because of things that they wanted to do was not the things that I wanted them to do, not of what the kids thought that they should be doing. So we just put them off, and we still continued to win. That's something that, you know, it's kind of foggy. I don't like to talk about them because they were excellent athletes, but they just had some habits that we just wouldn't put up with.
Did you have certain rules that the players had to follow? Sounds like you did.
Well, we did, and number one is they had to pass the classes. They had to come to school, because if you didn't come to school, you couldn't practice. If you didn't practice, you weren't going to play. And pass your classes, you had to conduct yourself a certain way. And I didn't put too much value, tried to get them some time to say that rest, correct foods, that what you can have, and those things would be good for you. And of course, when we went to play various games, we had certain dress. We went to church together as a team. And a few other little quirks here and there that we did that we thought were good. And some kids in the town there, some of the fellows in the town who were grown men there, got some of them got grandchildren, but sometimes want to call me on the carpet for some of the things I made some of them do.
What kind of things did you make them do?
Well, it's like a parent said once, what about getting the kid to go to church? You make him do more things than I can. I said, well, there are some things that he wants to do, see, that I have some control over, and he knows if he doesn't do those things and that I want him to do, I'm not going to let him do some of the things that he wants to do. So it was really two good times. And Lincoln was known across the state of North Carolina, not only because of athletic teams, they had good bands, and they turned out good students, and what have you. It's too bad that a lot of them got caught up to the point to where, without some help, some of them couldn't go to school. But then they turned out some good citizens, good students, and what have you, for the ones that could go to school.
I guess in a way you've answered this question already, but I'll ask it anyway and be redundant. What did the football team mean to the students at the school?
I have always said, and I still say, because of looking around now, if you have good athletic teams within a school system, within a school, then it cuts down on a lot of problems otherwise that you would have. And it starts basically with football, because football is basically the first sport that you play in a school year. It's football. I know now it's changed because of so many sports that they do play. But football was the predominant sport during this particular time. And if you have good football teams, it permeates throughout the entire school, and it lifts and helps the other things that you're going to do come up to par, come up to snuff, or whatever you want to call it, because it permeates and it just goes over the entire student body. It cuts down on a lot of discipline problems. It makes kids want to do good in school because the athletes, they see the athletes. It makes the bands want to be good. It does some other things. I know the bandmaster here at that particular time was Clark Edgerton. He was from Durham and a graduate of Hillside also. Even though I was older than he was, he used to tell me, when you go scout the football team, scout the band and bring back a report to me too. So I know exactly what they're doing. And they were an excellent band. A fella said to me the other day when I spoke to the Rotary Club, said, one of the things best I remember about Lincoln was watching those students march in the Christmas parade. So when you have those things and you have good athletic teams, it permeates and goes through the whole student body. And a lot of people latch on to it and want to do those things, do some good things.
What was the conditioning that the athletes went through in the summertime?
Well, it wasn't basically like it is now, because I have some thoughts and things about what they require kids to do now. As far as you have the basketball, the way kids play basketball year round, other sports where they want the baseball, where they had played winter baseball in high school and those things. And kids, people don't want certain athletes to play certain sports. My thing was let a kid participate in as many sports as he want to participate in, and then later let him choose the one that he wants to play. Now, most of the kids that I coach, they play football, they play basketball, and they play a whole lot of other things, too. When you get down to where you limit what a child can do, sometimes you run into trouble. And I know now that everybody's looking at the big bucks. You're going to make playing basketball, or you're going to make playing baseball, or you're going to make with a golf stick or whatever. Why not let a child grow up normal, participate in all the things that he want to participate in? If he's good enough when he gets to be a senior in high school or what have him, then let him choose the one that he want to play and let him go from there. See, I think sometimes we bring kids out. And one of my best friends, we argue all the time because he has a grandson who's an excellent baseball player, and he don't want him to play nothing else but baseball. And I said, that's wrong. You know, let him participate in all of the things that he want to participate in, then let him choose what he will. Well, he might miss this and the other. And people are so money conscious about these things now that I think they missed the boat. And a lot of kids are burned out by the time some of them 12, 13, 14 years old, the way that they're playing them now. I couldn't imagine having a child at 9 or 10 years old playing on the baseball team and throwing curveballs. I would be livid because I think it hurts his arm. I think he needs to be able to grab back and throw the ball as hard as he can and learn to throw it over the plate. He goes to trying to fool people. And that's just me. I may be wrong, but that's just me. I played baseball, and I know what it can do for you in the long run. It can cause arm problems and everything else. So it's just one of those things.
Did you suggest that your football players during the summer get particular jobs or weightlifting?
Weightlifting, I think, was one of the things that we didn't do. It was kind of a taboo at that particular time, and now it's one of those things that if you don't do, then you're gonna be way behind. Well, the only thing that basically you could suggest to them was, you know, try to find your job. And one of my things I learned from playing college football was, if I worked in construction and worked outside during the summertime, it acclimated me for whenever football practice did start. Plus, it did some other things for me too. Weightlifting was one of those things that wasn't as prevalent then as it is now, and I know that. When you have to lift weights now, if you're going to be strong and going to keep up with what people are doing. But back then, it was just one of those things that really, truthfully, we didn't do.
Was there a particular construction job that the athletes...
It didn't make any difference, and I think what I wanted them to do was have something to do during the summer so that they wouldn't be dripping and running in the streets and getting into a whole lot of trouble. And it was one of those things, the way you could suggest that they thought that you do them. It wasn't anything that I could say, hey, you know, go this job and get this and do that and do the other. It was just a suggestion that you do certain things during the summer so that you'll stay out of trouble.
I've heard stories about the uniforms that the players wore, as well as some rituals that they went through before the game that seemed to me to be very intimidating to the other team, and I wondered if you could discuss those two things, the shoes, the shoelaces, other things about the uniform.
I was, I'm trying to think back now, but I know one thing about it. We did, going from the school to where we played out of Carver Baseball Park at that particular time. That was the same place that Chapel Hill High School played. We did singing, and kids believed in prayer. They believed in trying to be dressed as well as they could as far as the uniforms were concerned. And I'm trying to think now. I know that we bought one or two sets of brand new uniforms while I was working there, and that was because of the amount of money they were making, and I wanted them to look as good as they possibly could because the way that they were playing, I wanted people to say that. They had to have the shoes shine, and that was left up to them. I can think of maybe some. Those are about the only things, Bob, that really and truthfully I can really think about. I know that a principal once told me that he played against some of the kids. Now, president of a college told me he played against some kids that were at Lincoln when he was in high school. And they were at the park warming up. And when we got there and he looked and we got off the bus, he shook his head because he knew, said, well, we're going to get tore up tonight. And basically, we did tear him up as far as the school was concerned. But as far as rituals and those things were concerned, not too much. I can't think of anything that really, and truthfully, that we did do. I know that sometimes you got kids who don't like to shower. That was one of the things that I demanded that you do. Because really and truthfully, I would basically sometimes just go in the shower with them and let them know that this was one of the things that they had to do. One boy teases me now, said the reason he wiped between his toes is because I told him he had to wipe between his toes to keep from having the... Right, so this is the part.
Maybe this didn't happen when you were coach, but someone told me a story that the team would get onto the field and they'd do a lap around the field and then they'd go to the center of the field and they'd do some singing about a mountaintop in Tennessee and they'd have a hand clapping and some things like that.
No, we didn't basically. We tried to keep it low-key of it. And when we did calisthenics, we tried to line up in some type of formation and shout to the top of our lungs then. That could have been with Pierman, but not with me.
So, but you did have some rituals in your
stretches
and warm-ups.
Right. Yeah, those things.
Guest enthusiasm. And,
right.
You had mentioned uniforms that and money for the uniforms. Did that come from the profits that came from people paying to get in to see the game?
It did, and because no money was allocated real and truthful from the school system, and no money was allocated because just didn't have money. So the monies that we bought uniforms and those things, we had to use that particular money to buy a uniform. And we bought whatever uniforms, whatever athletic equipment we had to buy from that. Oftentimes, you'd end up sometimes being in debt, and you pay it off in 3 or 4 years, and you'd be out of debt, and then you'd go right back in debt again. But the university was mighty good a lot of times. Mr. Morris Mason, who worked down in the athletic department down there, was mighty good about looking out for us in some particular instance. If they had something that they just didn't want, and they were going to get rid of, he said, Coach, I got so forth and so on, you think you can use it? Let me see it. And most times it would be, sometimes what they were casting off would be as good or better than some of the things that we did have. I can remember once that when Coach Tatum was there, that he didn't believe in if he used the ball in the game, the next game, you know, he got rid of those. And so I ended up one time with about 60 footballs. We had enough football to practice when it was rainy weather, when it was dry weather, when we were warming up to play a game. And then sometimes even play a game. But on top of that, sometimes I gave him weight. Had one big kid who weighed pretty close to 300 pounds. We couldn't find shoulder pads anywhere to fit him. So he's just sitting down here, and they put some shoulder pads on him. So we had a lot of contact around town, which was very, very good. I don't know, I don't imagine they do the same things now, but they did for us, though. So we had good contact with people.
If you had injuries, could you use the facilities down at the university?
We probably could go and get some opinions about those particular things to where someone would want to look at them. But believe it or not, we didn't have a training in the school, and I had come through a physical education program to the point where we had to learn to tape. So therefore, most of the taping that was done, you know, any athlete, I was the one who had to do it.
You were the coach and trainer.
Coach and trainer. And
cook the bottle washer there, huh?
Not the chief cook, because somebody else did the cooking. But, and I didn't do any driving the buses. We had some other people to do those. But we were well taken care of as far as those things are concerned. Right.
I understand that the school provided a meal for the visiting team.
It did.
Was that after the game?
After the game. And a little story going there, too. the first football game that I considered myself a coach, and that was down in Lawnbury. Went and played against Hamlet, North Carolina, the school that was in Hamlet, Monroe Avenue. And Monroe Avenue had been playing football, and this school was just starting football. First football game under the coach. And the coach beat us pretty bad that day. He didn't take his fresh thing out, and he just ran the score up on him. But I kind of stored that back and never forgot it. So the 3 years I was down there, he beat me pretty bad. The next year, I think he beat me by 2 touchdowns. The third year, he beat me something like 1 touchdown or 3 or 4 points. Then I came to work at Chapel Hill. And we ended up playing him while I was in Chapel Hill. 5 years I was in Chapel Hill, he never beat me. And the last year I was here, we were supposed to go down to his place and play. But we had been so successful in Chapel Hill to where money was a thing that a lot of these teams didn't have. And so then you could basically entice them to do certain things. So I went to scout him and I made him. We were supposed to go play him and we were supposed to play in the daytime. And on the $20 guarantee, which wasn't in the money at all. And I said, well, how great is I tell you what you do? If you would come to Chapel Hill to play us and play us at night, I'll give you $200 and I'll give you a meal before the game and give you a meal after the game.